This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the Elect to Defend the Trees Enviro Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
Yeah, I'm a very sad Glenn Ayers.
Oh, well, I don't know, Glenn. Is it deja vu all over again, like Yogi Bear said? Or worse? Strap in. It's going to be a rough ride because go to the blog, click on the link, that's EnviroShow, that's w.blogspot.com. In terms of the climate crisis and the sixth great extinction, a lot was riding on this election. Oh, wait, did we forget to mention the future of our nation? Oh, speaking of, how about the lack of understanding and respect by far too many folks concerning our trees and forests? Michael Kellett, co-founder and executive director of Restore the North Woods, returns to the show as we discuss what's wrong in this picture. Okay, let's have the Enviro Show quote of the week. What do you say? Okay, strap in, folks. Here it is. Trumpism triumphed, and the godhead of this cult has become both the first fascist and the first convicted felon to win an American presidential election. Close quote, and that's from David Corn, activist and writer.
Yeah, well, what can you say? I think a lot of people were duped. I would assume mostly Russian, but probably other countries as well, putting out misinformation and propaganda. And of course, you know, the whole social media disinformation ecosphere, or whatever you want to call it, technosphere. I think that's really probably underlying what happened.
Right. Of course, there's a good bit of racism and sexism involved as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't forget that. We're still in the backlash phase because we elected a black president, you know, with Obama. And so the white supremacists, they're still really upset about that. They'll never get over it. But I was very excited about some of the forest policies that the Biden administration had put in place, the review of mature and old growth forests. I mean, you know, at least that was going in the right direction. But now all of that is going to be undone, and we're going to be going in the complete opposite direction. And honestly, it's going to be up to activists to hold back that. And we have a job in front of us. We're all going to be needed to push back against what's coming, the tsunami that's coming.
Right, back to the wrong direction. Okay, I think it's time to go to our interview with Michael. What do you say?
Yeah, we'll be talking about the idea of forest protection. And, you know, on the show, we've been focused forever on forest protection and limits to growth and the climate crisis, and really focusing a lot on why isn't the government, the state government here in Massachusetts, actively working to protect our forests, especially our publicly owned forests. But we'll get into that with Michael, and then we'll see if we have anything to say on the other side. All right. Today on the Enviro Show, we are once again joined by our kind of go-to guy when it comes to, I'm going to say, ecology, the natural world, especially forests and wildland protection. And that is Michael Kellett, Executive Director of Restore the North Woods. Michael, we had you on a few shows ago, but since then we've had a whole bunch of other people talking about forest protection, especially surrounding the watershed protection lands around the Quabbin Reservoir, Ware River, Wachusett, And the North Adams folks talking about the watershed lands around their public water supply reservoir for North Adams, which the Audubon, Mass Audubon, has proposed logging. And it's crazy. We'll get into that. But welcome back to the show. So nice of you to be here to talk with us about this. And we did have the Sierra Club Forest Protection Team folks on the show a few shows ago, and they really went through their campaign having to do with the Quabbin Reservoir. But I'd like to get into a little more of a deep dive with you about the underlying kind of motivation for why the loggers, and those are the loggers outside of DCR and outside of the agency, but also the ones that are inside DCR, why they're so focused on logging public lands especially. It seems like they're focused on that not only here in Massachusetts. I have friends in Northern Jersey. The same thing's happening there. So let's talk about that and try to figure out why are these woodchucks so determined to chop down the public lands that the public doesn't even know is happening for the most part, and people think they're already highly protected.
Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here. I think what most people don't really understand is this is really ideology to a great extent. I mean, money is involved, of course. All this logging is subsidized by the public. But really what's driving this is these are people who, and they have good intentions. They think they're doing the right thing, but they believe that humans pretty much ought to be managing all the forests and everything else, and that we're so smart and educated that we know the right thing to do, and that we should just let foresters do what's needed. So if you start with that assumption, then you go look at a forest, and it's not whether it ought to be a wilderness or wildland. It's okay, of course this should be managed. What's the best way to manage it? How much should we manage it? When should we manage it? And the other thing is, you assume that there are a whole array of good things that result from management. So again, you reverse engineer, you say, okay, management and forestry is good. What could be all the reasons for this particular area that it's good to log and do other forestry? And so what happens is there's a menu of supposed benefits that all of these logging jobs, if you read the description, they draw from the same menu, basically, of stuff that they don't all have exact, you know, some of them leave some things off, but it's pretty predictable. I mean, I've been following this, as you know, you too, for decades, and the menu hasn't changed very much. The main thing that's changed is climate change now. They've jumped on that. And they basically have decided that's another reason to do logging is for climate change. So that's a relatively new. But other than that, and the thing that things that supposedly they do logging wise for climate change, it's the same old logging. There's nothing new in terms of, you know, they talk about climate smart forestry or whatever. It's just forestry. It's the same old industrial forestry. They just basically say, you know, it's amazing. The forestry we've been doing for decades, it's exactly what we need for climate smart forestry. So no need to change. Let's just keep doing what we're doing, which is great. And the public doesn't know this. The public assumes that foresters are like forest ecologists. They think that the forester's job is to protect the forest and to understand the ecosystem and to make sure the forest is healthy and so forth. But really, as we know, the job of a forester, it's like a farmer. They basically are tree farmers. They grow trees to cut them down, and the trees they want to promote are the ones that are good for timber. And all the other stuff in the forest is really considered sort of superfluous. And that's why these logging jobs, I've never seen ever a logging proposal where they did a super deep, detailed inventory of all the species that are there in the area before they log. I've never seen that. They never look, they'll look at what tree species are there. They'll look at sort of a few birds and mammals and you know, the what kind of flowers you can see if you look around. They never look at salamanders. They never look at bacteria. They never look at fungi or lichens, any of the, you know, insects, maybe a couple of butterflies or whatever. So they really have no idea what's there before they start logging. So that's what really, to me, undermines their credibility big time, aside from anything else, is that they really don't know what they're doing in terms of what they're starting with. And so how can they judge what the whether these projects are successful or not? Because it's an uncontrolled experiment.
Right. There are a bunch of things that you said that kind of triggered me. And one of those was that they're coming up with all these excuses or whatever, these new things. So the New England Forestry Foundation calls their Climate Smart Forestry program, oh, I think it's exemplary forestry.
Right.
Then some other group, they call it ecological forestry.
Right.
And then there's, you know, they have all these different names, like brand marketing kind of names, slogans for logging, so that they create these euphemisms. And, you know, the gullible public, they go, oh, that sounds good. They're ecological. Or, oh, that sounds good. You know, the Audubon, they're all about logging for the birds, you know, and they claim that they have to log for, well, we've talked about this in the past, and you've written a paper about it. They have to log mature forests in order to create early successional habitat for prairie species that actually would not naturally be in a northern forest ecosystem in a mature forest. So anyway, you know, that's one thing that they're doing. But this focus on the watershed lands is really disturbing to me, because I'm a retired public water supply operator, and I always wanted to focus on what to do to improve water quality, to protect and improve water quality. And yet, if you asked me, I would say logging is the last thing you'd want to do to protect and improve water quality, because it's not protecting water quality. In fact, it's going to have a big impact on water quality. All of the skid trails, the roads, the logging equipment, the exposed soil, all of that stuff, that's a disaster. But they're so focused now on logging the lands around the water supply for Boston, especially. And I've been involved in out in North Adams, where they're proposing to log the watershed protection forest for the drinking water supply for the city of North Adams. And they want to do it. Get this. This is totally insane. They want to do it at the same time as they're also rebuilding a very dangerous dam, two dams within that water supply system that are considered to be unsafe. And so they're going to do a multi-year project to repair those dams, dredge out the reservoirs, increasing the size of the reservoirs significantly without analyzing any of the impacts the Audubon and New England Forestry Foundation and the Mohawk Trail Woodlands Partnership are pushing the city by giving them grant funding and all kinds of incentives to log their watershed protection land, which is crazy. So the thing that I think of all the time is, well, what's the motivation? Where's the financial incentive coming from? And to me, it seems like these loggers and these fake green groups are after the big trees. They're after supplying their friends and the international timber market with the biggest trees they can find. And those big trees happen to be on public lands, because almost all the private lands that are available for logging, because most people that own private land don't want to log it, but the lands that have been logged have been so high graded and severely degraded that there are no big trees left on private lands with owners that want to actually cut them down. So they're after these big old trees, 100-year-old red oak trees and other big trees that are on our public lands. And we have a willing administration, and especially within DCR, a cabal of forest cutters, forest managers, foresters, and their appointed minions from within the timber industry that have infiltrated the DCR and are now working to get the cut out. So what do you think about that? It's that they're targeting these areas because that's where they can find these big, valuable trees to add into the multi-billion dollar international timber market. Most of those trees are going over to Asia.
Well, I mean, that is certainly the case in some places, but it goes beyond that, I think, though, because and the big trees are, of course, what helps to fund what they want to do. But really, if you look at, and you know this, if you look at, let's say, national forest logging projects, a lot of the stuff they're cutting is not really big, valuable trees, although they are in the mix. But I think it's even beyond what you're talking about. What it is is they are concerned that the way we manage public lands has a big impact on the way people think of what's the right thing to do for forests. People look to public lands as that's the way we ought to be taking care of forests. They're public. This is for the public good. So if all of a sudden you're saying logging is actually not good for the forest, in fact, it does a lot of harm and it loses money and it degrades the forest and it spews out carbon and it degrades biodiversity and it's ugly and nobody wants to recreate there, the public, and that's why we're not going to do it on this public forest, people go, whoa, maybe that's true. And if that's the case, why are we doing it all over, in other places? And so I think a good chunk of it is that the forest industry is afraid that this is a slippery slope, that if they start losing traction on public lands logging, it's going to make it all of a sudden people are going to start second guessing and questioning all these claims they make, which we've talked about, sort of a forestry legend that they've created. There's a whole legend of, the healthy forests and out west, they're, with the fires. Oh, we got to thin and do burning for the health of the, that's all bogus, pretty much. So I think it's what you're talking about is part of it, but it goes even more so. It's really they're really afraid they're going to lose traction because they've created a whole mythology. And all of a sudden, if you start poking holes in the claims they make, the public's going to start going, and I think in Massachusetts, people are starting to say, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right to me. And geez, I'm hearing these other counterfactual things that come, against their supposed facts. And that makes sense to me. So let's go to them and say, why are you guys still logging? Let's demand some answers and let's demand information. And the agencies are not providing it. They're stonewalling.
Michael, Theo here. I'm wondering, speaking of the fantasies that are created by the industry, in a recent Healy Forests as Climate Solutions Initiative, most everyone on the panel, both foresters and scientists, agreed that logging around reservoirs is not helpful for water quality.
Right.
And it continues.
Yeah. Well, yes. And in fact, the comments that we submitted on these, on their 18, they're proposing 18 new logging jobs on the Wachusett, Ware, and Quabbin watersheds. And call out to Janet Sinclair, who she co-wrote these comments with me. And what they do is they claim that they need to do this because of because if they don't log, then the forest is going to be unhealthy and it's going to fall down. But they call it a working hypothesis, which is a bizarre thing. So you have a hypothesis, you just sort of guess that maybe this is the way things are. And instead of saying, okay, let's do a careful study with controls and experiment and we'll limit it, they just do it everywhere. And so they claim that they need to log for water quality. There's no evidence that logging is benefits water quality or is necessary. And as you mentioned, this report that involved a lot of foresters, this committee, which was, I think, a dozen people. But even so, the state agency people admitted that it's not needed, that we don't need to log to protect water quality on the reservoirs. So okay, if they don't need to log for water quality, why do they need to log? And they just sort of say, oh, well, we need to log because it's good for forest health. There's some really weird things that they say. For example, they say, here's a quote that we picked out. More than 1,000 timber harvests have been conducted over the last 50 years on these watershed lands, and our monitoring has shown no decreases in water quality related to these harvests. The water supply remains among the cleanest and purest in the world. So what if they didn't log? How do they know that if they didn't log, the water quality would be even better? They have no idea. There's no other watershed out there that's comparable where they don't do this logging. So they're just saying, oh yeah. So it's sort of like, you know, I woke up this morning and I said hallelujah and I looked out and the sun came up. So I guess saying hallelujah every morning means that's going to make the sun come up. I mean, it's reverse engineering. They want to log. They think that it's good for forests, and they figure it must be good for water quality. And one of the things this is not a new thing either. Glenn, you've worked on Western forest issues, and you too, Dio, you're aware of what's happened in the past at the Bull Run watershed, which is the water supply of Portland, Oregon, which is in the national forest lands. They were logging, this was an old growth forest, they were logging, doing the same kind of stuff, and people started saying, wait a minute, this is crazy. Why are we logging a watershed forest? So there were lawsuits and so forth, and they ended up stopping logging there because there was plenty of evidence that it was bad for watersheds. They've just developed this sort of inbred thinking on this stuff, and it's because of, you know, they believe forests ought to be managed.
Yeah, so one of the other big things that they claim is that they're logging for the climate, and that by cutting down the forests,
right,
they're going to make the climate crisis better, when all of the science, I mean, literally all of the science says the opposite. In fact, a pretty large percentage of the CO2 currently in the atmosphere and that has been released over the past, you know, few hundred years, but especially in the last 100 years, a lot of that CO2 in the atmosphere is from forest destruction.
Yep.
And yet they keep claiming that when they cut down the forests, they're doing something good for the climate. And it just boggles the mind that they can get away with these lies. And someone who we've also had on the show in the past, Dr. Dominic Della Sala,
mm-hmm.
I just got a copy, an advanced copy of a paper that he just recently got approved for publication. It hasn't been published yet. And it's the title, I think, is Measuring Forest Degradation Via Ecological Integrity Indicators at Multiple Spatial Scales. Now, that sounds kind of dense, but it's a really excellent paper where he talks about all of the impacts from logging, especially on biodiversity and the climate, and how, you know, it's kind of a synthesis paper putting all of this research in one place. So I'm hoping to get a copy of that when it gets published. It has been peer reviewed and approved. So, you know, that's an indication that their claims about this logging for the climate is absolute BS. And yet we have the Healey administration here in Massachusetts just promoting this. And I understand it's mostly, I think she's being hoodwinked by these people that are left over from the Baker administration, Kurt Gertner and Stephanie Cooper, who used to be at DCR. Well, at least Stephanie used to be the acting commissioner of DCR. And they're the ones that are pushing this ridiculous program that was put in place by Bob O'Connor, who I think we announced on the last Enviro show is no longer working for the state. Hallelujah. That is something that we can all celebrate, is that Bob O'Connor is no longer in any kind of position of bribing all of the other conservation groups in Massachusetts to want to log their land and support logging on public lands. So good riddance, Bob O'Connor. I'm so glad that he is no longer there. At least that's what I heard. So, but the other thing is that, you know, somehow we have to really strenuously refute this idea that they're logging and it's improving the climate, because it's taking us in the absolute opposite direction, rapidly in the opposite direction, and it's going to take decades and decades to recover from this damage, this degradation. And we don't have that time. Remember, right. we're supposed to have protected 30% of our forests from degradation by 2030, 6 years from right. now, or 5 years from now, really. And so you would think that they'd be throwing lots of money at this, you know, the state would be throwing lots of money at protecting, permanently protecting land, but they're not. They're trying to protect some additional lands on private lands. And meanwhile, the state is targeting our publicly owned lands for intensive resource extraction and logging. And so we talk to you about this all the time, but it seems like the only solution, I mean, we've gone through these public participation processes, which were a complete sham. I'm sorry, I participated in them. It was a total waste of time. They had this forest climate committee of experts. Of course, it was stacked 9 loggers or pro-timber people and 3 scientists. And the 3 scientists did a good job of presenting the minority opinion, but they were overruled. So it seems like the only solution that we really have available to us, besides, you know, direct action and nonviolent civil disobedience and that kind of stuff, is to go back to the legislature and push for a legislative solution to this, because the administration is not doing it. We expected Maura Healey. She put a moratorium in place. We expected her to be a forest champion. We expected Melissa Hoffer to be a forest champion. We had her on this show. And boy, she spoke the right words when she was on this show. But now, I guess, political reality sets in and campaign contributions dictate what happens. And we're very disappointed with the Healey administration at this point. So tell us what's coming up in the realm of reintroducing legislation to finally protect the watershed lands, the state forests, and even the municipal forests within Massachusetts. If you add all of that up, it's almost 1 million acres. And that would be, in my opinion, that would be a damn good start for permanent protection of forests in Massachusetts.
Right. And the reason why that's the approach I have spent most of my effort on for years is because you can argue forever on these things. You know, they'll claim that forests are more resilient to being blown over and disease and insects, so that way the forest will remain standing, so it'll have more carbon. I mean, they'll just go on. They have zillions of arguments. They're all speculative. None of it is based on any kind of empirical long-term study, because climate change hasn't even been here, at least acknowledged, for all that long. So it's all just speculation, but it sounds very scientific and convincing. And you can go around and around and around, and there are millions and millions of dollars, billions of dollars behind the industry of cutting down trees. And so they can generate endless propaganda on this, which they are. So to me, just try that, and they know that they can wear down citizens who are concerned about this. They'll just keep it going forever. And they figure eventually you're going to go back to doing your, you know, you have a real job somewhere, you have a family, and you're not going to spend your whole life, the rest of your life, fighting this. So they know that you're going to eventually just go back and they can just keep doing it. That's why my feeling is the only way to ensure that these forests are protected is to draw a line around these areas and say, no further, no more logging here. These areas are off limits, they're reserves. Or national parks, we're proposing new national parks in New England, or wilderness areas, or wildlands. You know, Adirondack Park is a state preserve, which is a wilderness preserve, same thing. There are various ways to do this, but it's basically you draw a line around it. You say, you know, we're not going to argue about what's, are you doing better forestry, less forest? We don't want any forestry on these lands. There's too much logging going on globally. I mean, it's well understood. There's too much logging. We've deforested, it's about a third of the original forests on the planet have been deforested. And so we ought to be rolling back the amount of logging, not increasing logging, yet we have special interests in New England calling for a 50% increase in logging, a lot of it in southern New England. So the public need, and the public, most people don't know any of this is going on. We know that people love national parks, they love wilderness areas, they love protection. So we need to just get people behind permanent protection of public lands without logging or mining or drilling and anything else like that. And that's why we had several bills in the legislature that I was involved with, and they haven't passed yet, but each in the last three sessions of the legislature, each time we've gotten these bills introduced, there's more and more public support because people are learning what the problem is and what this would do, and they're going, of course we should protect these forests. So we're working on reintroducing these bills, and we haven't finalized exactly the language or the actual bills to be introduced, but it's likely that what we'll do is have a separate bill for watershed forests, because those forests got lumped into the rest of the Department of Conservation and Recreation lands, and they basically sort of just covered up what they were doing, and most people didn't even know what they were doing logging on those lands. So those need to really be a separate thing, I think, and it's about 100,000 acres of public land in these three watersheds, and it ought to all be, other than places, you know, around the Quabbin, there's an area where public, you know, there's that you can drive in and park and whatever. That could be a park. We have parks, state parks. Other than that, it all ought to be reserves where there's just no logging, none of this intensive stuff. I think most people in Massachusetts would think that's a great idea if they knew about it. So our goal is to get the word out and build support. So our goal is to start next year with the next legislative session with new legislation to protect our public lands as reserves. And I hope we can get people living in various towns and cities to maybe get some kind of an initiative going, you know, a movement or a coalition to protect those lands. And then we're proposing new national parks in New England that could involve some of these lands. These are not just important in the state of Mass, in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. These are nationally significant lands. This is an incredible forest that's recovering from a century or two of logging,
right.
And these are really important forests. People may not understand how important they are nationally and internationally. So anyway, I'm very encouraged because people get it when you talk to them about this. It's just that we haven't reached everybody yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Michael, thanks so much for being on the show. And again, folks can follow Michael at restore.org or at savemassachusettsforest.com. And we'll be checking in again with you, I'm sure, at the beginning of the legislative session and talking more about the legislation that you're planning on refiling. But on behalf of all of our listeners and us on the Enviro Show, we want to thank you for your tireless advocacy and activism on behalf of the wild and nature. And keep up the great work, Michael. You're an inspiration to all of us.
Thanks, Michael. Okay.
Thanks to you and Dio. Same thing.
Okay, we are back. So it's always good to have Michael on the show, I must say.
Yeah, we rely on him, and he is really on top of the whole situation here in the Northeast especially, but really he has a much broader viewpoint. And this idea of creating new national parks, that's something we're going to have to come back to. Again, that's going to require a willing president and Congress to do that. And it doesn't look like we're going to have those opportunities after January. So I'm I'm hoping that our current president will be able to do some designations under the Antiquities Act before January. And then we'll have to all work on pushing for that and being ready, because we know it's coming, it's going to be bad. And it's going to take all of us to keep the ship from sinking.
All right. Well, on the positive side, Glenn, we'll never run out of ridiculous stories for the show, right?
No, that is true. This is a bonanza for late night television talk show hosts and also for gallows humor. There's going to be a totally unending supply of absurdity. But we would have preferred if it went in a totally different direction.
Sure. Well, we'll still be at it, you know, until they come crashing into the studio to try and drag us out, kicking and screaming.
Yeah, well, hey, when they pry my microphone out of my cold, dead fingers, that's right.
So I don't know, Glenn, what do you think? Are we done with the show?
We're done with this show, but we're not done with our work. And we are going to be continuing the resistance.
Exactly. And we'll also continue, and we hope our listeners will continue to listen to your mother. And this is Dio saying adios. Stay strong.
And I'm Glenn Ayers. Remember what Emerson said, resist much, obey little. Take care.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.